Thank you very much. Marvellous. A very good afternoon to you in Edinburgh. William Coles, how are you, sir?
I'm tip-top. Thank you so much for asking. How are you, Alex?
I'm okay after the concert on Saturday, which hopefully Jessica Burtis in North Carolina, you were duly listening to, or was it a case of concert? What concert was that? Could it be the Victoria Simmons Chloe Rose concert?
No, I want to. I couldn't find the link.
SirenOnline.co.uk. You can go there again after you finish the show today and actually just seek out Siren Radio Presents in the Listen Again facility, and it'll be there, and we'll also put it up as a podcast there. Worry not, Jessica. We couldn't possibly have you showing a lack of support, although obviously it will be a recording now. It already has actually taken place, so we're just making that quite clear. Tosin, you were there at least for half of the whole process. Did you enjoy the whole thing, or was it a case of, well, I wish I'd stayed with Brentford, and I wish they'd only equalised, but never mind, being an Arsenal supporter.
It was an amazing show. I enjoyed it. I came in late, but from what I saw, it was really an amazing. Victoria did that thing. I listened to at least a part of Otoba Girl, so I could get that Bond music into me again and sing with her. And I got to listen to Chloe Rose too. She was amazing, amazing song. And the Christmas song she did was out of this world, I won't even lie.
There we are. It's a win-win situation.
So 10 over 10.
You see, William Coles, what you've missed staying in Edinburgh, although, funnily enough, your name was mentioned last night when I was in conversation with Victoria, because I thought maybe we could actually take this little show on the road to Edinburgh. I'm sure William knows of some venues that might accommodate, oh, I don't know, say 30 or 40.
Yes, come on up. I've got a front room which is big enough.
That's all we need. That's all we need, quite clearly, in terms of that, you know, and I shall pass that on. Hermione, you were there. Did you enjoy it?
Of course I did. It was amazing. I was there for the whole thing.
You're part of the Signet PR team that was actually coordinating the whole structure.
Yeah, so I was there very early on, as was Anna.
But absolutely.
No, we got the pleasure of listening to both Victoria and Chloe, and also Chloe's...
We're talking Harry David here.
Yeah,
Harry David. That's right.
Yeah, he was amazing on the guitar.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
it's just a win-win
really
situation. And of course, Anna, you enjoyed it as well.
Yes, it was really good. Victoria's voice as well with Chloe's vibe and
pretty amazing.
Harry's skills.
Really the only reason we could actually say that's the reason we didn't watch the Doctor Who 60th anniversary special live was because we had a concert to coordinate and actually produce and obviously attend and listen to. So Alan Stevens, who's busily been sending me, whilst we've been speaking, a whole range of the original comic strips by Dave Gibbons with the Star Beast in the original Doctor Who magazine, which is always great from that point of view. Alan Stevens, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Live. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I think I've already answered that question a few minutes ago, and I haven't changed too much since that. And it
generalizes... Well, you never know. Yeah. You did mention my name. That you can come over a bit queer when you say that, can't you? You know, a bit fuzzy around the edges, start blurring.
No, I'll leave that to Doctor Who. Astonishingly... Apart from, I think, William Coles and Jessica Burtis in Edinburgh and North Carolina, respectively, no one else in the studio other than myself is really au fait with the character of Doctor Who. Let's just test this. In Nigeria, Tosin, Doctor Who, big, small, irrelevant?
It's a niche. It's a very niche side.
Very niche.
Yeah.
Yeah, very
you
niche.
You need to know it to, like, you know, you don't get it unless you know it, to be honest. Yeah.
That's a fair point. Hermione?
Well, I mean, I said before... We came on. You know, I know of Doctor Who.
You know of Doctor Who.
I know of Doctor Who. Yeah.
Does she know Harry Potter?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes.
And Anna, of course, you were confusing Doctor Who with House, of course, which is another thing starring, of course, another character entirely.
British actor.
British actor, exactly.
Yeah. But I figured that out a couple of shows ago. We're fine.
this is good. Jessica, are you or could you consider yourself a Whovian?
God, you know, love that word.
I think I would say I'm a Doctor Who fan. I used to watch, especially the season with the Raggedy Man and Amy Pond. I used to watch them every single day at lunch. So I'm not as big a fan as my brother or my mom, but I am a fan.
And William Coles, in many ways the quintessential soul who's never actually been put forward, as far as I'm aware, as being a Gallifreyan Time Lord occupant of the TARDIS. What's your view? Did you actually say, it's the 60th anniversary, it's the 25th of November, 2 days after the official 60th anniversary, it's David Tennant back with Donna Noble, played by Catherine Tate, it's must-view television. What were your thoughts?
I used to be a huge fan of Doctor Who, but I haven't watched it so much. I watched it a bit with my kids, but yeah, David Tennant, of the latest batch of Doctor Who's, for me, he's been the standout. Yeah, so perfect person to do.
And joining us as if by magic from somewhere in Florida, possibly Miami, possibly Florida, we never quite know, but maybe with a cryptic clue as well to hand, Kathy Manso. Are you a Doctor Who fan, Kathy?
I am a Doctor Who fan.
Have you seen The Star Beast?
I have not seen The Star Beast.
Wow. Well, Alan, this could be critical in terms of getting those audience figures nudged up. They've already been pretty substantial, certainly more substantial than Jodie Whittaker.
No, but not really.
Go on, share with us what your thoughts on Meep, 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 Meep.
Well, considering the viewing figures, at the moment, the overnight's come in as 5.8.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically consistent with what we've been getting for Doctor Who for the last five or six, probably since the second season of Capaldi. So it either means that Capaldi and Whittaker were doing badly and Doctor Who is still doing badly, or it means that's the kind of ratings you'll get now on television. I mean, in comparison, 10 years ago when they did the 50th anniversary, the story got an overnight of 8 million and an overall figure of about 12.5 million, which is pretty huge. This time, I think probably we're going to get 7.1 million when you've got the final figure comes in. So, you know, I don't know how to take it, really. I mean, obviously, there was a huge amount of publicity about Doctor Who, and Russell T. Davis appeared on TV and radio and goodness what else promoting it. So perhaps you would think, considering David Tennant was coming back and, it was the return of Russell T. Davis, it might have been bigger. I don't know. It's a difficult one, isn't it? As for my opinion of the episode, it wasn't bad. I mean, I'm not a fan of David Tennant, as you know. I mean, you and I go way back.
Way back, Alan.
Remember me continually slagging off David
Constantly.
Tennant.
Yeah. What's not to love about the Scots actor? You know, he's friendly. He's a Doctor Who fan. You know, sure, he's married to Peter Davidson's daughter.
Yeah, that's like weird, isn't it? I mean, he's his daughter, right? Yeah. His doctor's. And then also it's Peter Davis's daughter, who was the doctor. It's like incest.
Oh, no, really. Come on now,
it
please.
Is.
Not at 12 minutes past five on a Wednesday afternoon.
I never married her. What? Anyway, getting back to what we were saying, not a fan of David Tennant, but David Tennant was extremely good in this. Mm. Very, very good indeed. And so was Catherine Tate. Obviously, they were extremely good. The dialogue was very, very good. You know, it looked nice. I watched it again last night and enjoyed it more the second time round. I think the elements concerning the transgender girl and was well handled and quite touching, really. So that was all good. It was based on a story written by Pat Mills It was released in February 1980 in Doctor Who Weekly. I got it. I remember buying it. Mm. I remember reading it. I remember liking it very much. It was Dave Gibbons, the guy who did the artwork. He went on to do Watchmen, the famous Watchmen. He did a lot of stuff, actually, Dave Gibbons.
He's done the Midway Drive.
Has he? Oh, that's good. Yeah, very nice. I mean, I've never met Gibbons or Pat Mills, but the early Doctor Who comic strips particularly stayed in my mind, and also Rusty Davis is the same thing, and I think they were particularly good. The first one was called The Iron Legion, about the Roman Empire from another dimension, was it? Never fell, and they were robot
or
legionnaires.
Life living in North Carolina in the 21st century.
And then there was City of the Damned, which was changed to City of the Cursed in America, because, of course, damn is a swear word. And then there was The Star Beast, Doctor and the Star Beast, which I reread yesterday, actually.
Meep.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great story. That's the kind of problem, really. I think that Russell T. Davis was obviously influenced by that story. I mean, there's a number of things about it. For example, it's set in, urban, a city, which was not a big thing that happened in Doctor Who back. Doctor Who was very much an in-space program. I mean, yeah, there was City of Death, in 1980, which was filmed in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the stories were not set in contemporary England. And it introduced the first female black companion, which took years for Doctor Who to catch up with that on TV anyway. And it was a very good story. It's a brilliant dual dialogue between, you know, we hear the thoughts of the meat saying, "God, you know, what terrible things he wants to do to these people," or they bat him, and also the meat's trying to put over being, "I'm just a friendly meat," sort of thing. So that works really, really well. There's a lovely scene of when the Roth warriors chase him onto a bus, and they escape on a bus, which I think would have been nice to have been in the visual production. Also, the Roth warriors are, you know, paranoid, violent psychopaths in the comic strip, whereas here they were made a bit soft. I think that Russell Davis has borrowed a lot from this comic strip over the years, because if you look at Boomtown, that concerns of Margaret Slavine wants to destroy Cardiff to blow up a nuclear power station so she could surf away from the planet. That's similar to what the meat wants to do in Black Castle in the original story.
Not that I wish to move you along, but I am going to, because I can see William Cole's beginning to lose the will to live here. What basically is your kind of rating for this, Alan? Is it an 8? Is it a 9? Is it worse?
It's
should indeed Tosin and Anna make every effort to find a platform, usually BBC iPlayer, which can actually present this. Will Jessica Burtis feel as though, even though there's no mention of any Fez or indeed Raggedy Man or indeed Matt Smith in this at all, she would still appreciate it? And so would her mom.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, it's kind of going back 13 years in picking up on a plot thread from then. And I think a lot of people, fans who like it, are fans who grew up with the Tenant Doctor and are pleased to see him back. I think it kind of grates with me a bit because it's not an accurate version of the comic strip, which I think is better.
Multi-universes.
I don't care. You know, you've got a very good story, and he ignores it and basically just uses it as what's in points. Having said that, though, you know, it's not bad. I'd say probably a 7.
A 7. Tosin.
Yeah.
I'll just ask a question, because I see Doctor Who on TikTok a lot, and I see, like, different iterations. So let's ask, who's the, like, people that watch Doctor Who, who's your favourite Doctor Who ever?
Wow.
Because from what he said, he doesn't like David Tennant. I think David Tennant is the most popular one I've seen online a lot, so... If David Tennant is not his favourite, who is his favourite? I like, for you guys too, who's
John
your favourite?
Probably John Pertwee or Don Baker. I'd personally go for Patrick Troughton, but then I probably would, being an ancient Daggett individual.
There's about 14, I don't know, I mean, there's a few others, isn't there? Like, but there's about 14 main ones, or main ones that actually did more than one episode. John Hurt played the Doctor for one story.
The War Doctor.
Yeah, so I
that wasn't
the
Geordie attempt, by the way. It wasn't War Doctor, as in, oh, we're pets, come over here, War Man.
Yeah, I think... If my two favourites are probably William Hartnell and Tom Baker.
William Coles, who was your favourite Doctor?
Tom Baker, without a doubt.
Mm. Yeah, Tom Baker, very good, yeah. Mm.
Kathy Mansour, your favourite Doctor?
Oh, favourite Doctor. I hate getting into the politics of this, but I think, you know...
Listen,
for
Kathy,
safety,
you're in Florida.
No. You know, it's
Disney,
fine.
Disney are co-financing this whole system.
I mean, okay. So I'm going to go with the one that drew me in, the one that made me interested in Doctor Who, which was David Tennant. That was the original for me. And then I learned about all the other Doctors. Well, that's what
I was going to say, Matt Smith. Wasn't that the one with Pond?
No, it's Jessica. Jessica Burtis is...
Sorry, I know our accents are similar, but...
One's North Carolina, one's Florida, with lots of lashings of Chile in there as well. You know, I don't know. I get them confused easily. It's very interesting.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Exactly. Okay, Anna, you said that you checked out some fan voices, including clips. So you'd done a sort of meta search on this because you didn't have access to the BBC iPlayer. What are your thoughts and what questions do you have, if any, for Alan Stevens before we get Kathy's cryptic crossword clue?
Well, it's true. I have watched a podcast. I think they are the official people that are discussing the show. And my question would be, based on that, you said that for the past 10 years, the views have decreased, even though the publicity and the channels where you can advertise the show are...
it's like a Siren Radio Presents concert, isn't it, really?
Why do you think so? Why do you think the views have decreased, even though it's pretty advertised?
The rating. When was Alex can probably answer this because I start losing track. When did the second season of Capaldi start?
Around about 2015, right. 2014, 2015.
Yeah. Okay. See, everything is relative. Back in the old days, Dot 2 would get about, well, in the Hinchcliffe era, it was about 11 million viewers. But on the whole, you know, the Williams era, now it would get about 9 million viewers.
And Philip Hinchcliffe, Graham Williams, in case you're wondering.
Yeah.
Producers.
And that was in the 70s. So in the 60s, the show would get between 7 and 10 million. Mm-hmm. In the 70s, it would get between 8 and 11 million.
There weren't that many channels around, of course, in those days.
Hang on. And in the 80s, there was a decline in the audience thing towards the end of the McCoy era.
Michael Gray didn't like it.
Yeah, it was attacked by the BBC itself, and it was getting a bit 5 million. When it came back, the average rating of Dot Who was 7.5 million, which was considered to be very, very good.
In a multi-channel age.
Yes, because people were watching less TV, and as Alex said, the multi-channel age, the average rating for a TV show of that time was about 5.7 million. And so Doctor Who was like 2 million above what you would normally expect for a show. That was considered amazing. In fact, a lot of other TV shows were made when off the back of Doctor Who. So I mean, they thought, my goodness, like Torchwood and
Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yeah, but also Robin Hood and all that stuff. So it was a big, big hit. Now, the show's been out now for 15 years. And in 2015, there was a drop, a substantial drop. The previous season had an average of 8 million. And then the following season had an average of 6 million, didn't it? And that's a huge 2 million.
Huge.
In fact, and
it's almost as though it went woke, isn't it? Almost as though it went woke.
No, it was never doing woke at all. It was two things, I think. The first thing is that Doctor Who is, you know, an old show now, and it's performing average to whatever TV programs have got. It's no longer like ahead of the show.
It's not that it's strictly, like, though, is it really?
Like those shows. I don't know. I don't watch Strictly, but. Capaldi, Philip Hinchcliffe is one of the producers of Doctor Who. He suggested that one of the problems with the casting of Capaldi was that you had the Doctor as a sort of attractive, young, romantic figure, and then you replaced him with this guy who...
Elderly soul, Scotsman as well,
and
with
that,
an accent.
And that, kind of put the audience off. So it could be that. And then they replaced him with a woman.
Jodie Whittaker.
Which started very, very well,
then
sort of declined back to Capaldi ratings again. Why that was, I don't know. I mean, certainly the earlier episodes of Whittaker weren't very good. She did improve, but I think it was probably too late, and that's why it never recovered from that. Why the show is still underperforming, I think, is perhaps people are just bored with Doctor Who.
Well,
I don't know.
Kathy, can we have your cryptic crossword clue, please? Because we can't get bored with Doctor Who. I have to jump in there straight away. Let's go with your cryptic crossword clue. William Coles is ready. He's got his pen poised. And so's Alan Stevens, even though for a moment I'd actually forgotten that Alan was joining us via telephone as opposed to Zoom things. He doesn't do Zoom. Anyway, over
to you. Well, you can't even see it anyway, can you? So what's the difference?
Well, you can see Kathy now. She can see us. Well, Kathy, go.
All right, so today's clue has, you have to fill in the blank. So, sugar, blank. Tree that turns fiery red in the fall. It is 5 letters, and the 4th letter is an L.
Can you say it again, please?
Yes, I'm afraid, you know. I mean, if your mum's using that in Romania to actually deconstruct Doctor Who, she's going to never get started.
Sorry, guys, I've been talking faster here, but one more time.
I said the answer,
sugar,
right?
Is Alan right? Is it maple?
It is a maple.
Wow. There
you are. Bloody hell.
Exactly. Straight in there, you know, astounding. I mean, genuinely astounding.
Thank you.
Alan, have you had obviously using the power of time travel to travel far back into the future. Do you want the question again, Alan?
I'm telling you, it was because of the phone connection and not because it was on Zoom. That's why.
Right.
Because of.
Okay then, Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us on the programme today?
Yeah, you can do me again next week for the next episode.
Well, when you say do you again, can I do you now, sir? A little reference to a 1940s comedy called Itmar, basically, which, you know, aficionados of the BBC will appreciate. And let's face it, it's Radio Times centenary this year, so happy
times.
And
what did Itmar stand for, Alex?
What does it stand for?
Itmar.
It's That Man Again.
That's right.
Okay. So, I know you tried there, but, you know, we have to keep these things constant. William Coles, have you had a good Zuma this week?
I've had an excellent one. I've learned a hell of a lot about Doctor Who. Thank you.
Will you be
it was an honour.
Will you be watching the second David Tennant 60th anniversary special on Saturday? So you're prepped for next week's show. Will you be able to return then?
Well, I will watch it on catch-up, definitely. I'm going to be super prepped. Next week, I'm going to be contributing to the Doctor Who conversation rather than sitting passively and sucking it up.
Exactly. Well said. Well said indeed.
I like that guy. He's funny.
He was. It's been said many a time, including by his former employers at News International. I like that, Will Coles. He's funny. If you want to actually find out more, well, you should do an audio version, Alan, of Dave Cameron's School Days, a classic from William Coles' political satire oeuvre. She's always good. Jessica, you're back with us for the second part, no doubt. Kathy, are you still sticking around for part two?
I am secure for part two.
Secure for part two. Excellent. That's great, because we're going straight into Jessica Morris, who's going to talk. She's going to talk a bit about Walkabout. Alan, we'll see you next week. Keep on keeping on. And now, time for a little ident.
Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Well, Walkabout are doing very well these days with respect to the University of Lincoln, because we'd already heard about one event, Bingo Across the Decades, of course. We've got another one that's coming up now, and we're going to invite Jessica Morris to effectively share with us how she's involved with that, what it is, and so on. Jessica, welcome to the programme. Tell us a bit about this event.
So it's called Crikey, I Can't Believe It's a Christmas Quiz. So it'll be on the 7th of December on Thursday. It's going to be from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. In support of the Lincoln Pride charity.
Okay, so a Christmas quiz. Mm. Is it going to entail a lot of Christmas questions, or is it a case of we might have questions from across the globe in all sorts of ways, some of which might be connected with St. Nick?
No, all of them connected to Christmas. So we have a sports Christmas round, history's Christmas round, Christmas music.
Right, well, I'm going to test you now, Jessica. You're not expecting this, but I am going to test you. Can you tell me the name of the band whose members included Noddy Holder, Dave Hill, Don Powell, and Jimmy Lee?
I have no idea.
Oh, dear. Okay, I'll give you a clue. They had a very, very famous Christmas hit in 1973, and it was called Merry Christmas, Everybody.
Oh, I love that song.
Yes. So who are the band?
Is it Wizard?
No. No, that would have been I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. You were looking for Slade.
Slade, yeah.
0 out of 1 so far. Question two. Let's just throw this in as well. There is a very famous Christmas movie that many people would say is their number one Christmas movie, starring Bruce Willis. What's it called?
Bruce Willis.
Mm. Two words.
Is it like Die Hard?
It is. You have managed to redeem yourself. 1 out of 2. And let's see, in terms of the third one, whether you can get this as well. Who wrote the Christmas perennial classic, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas? Who wrote it?
I couldn't tell you.
That would be Irving Berlin. Jessica, it has to be said, you'll need to brush up on your Christmas knowledge if you wish to actually sort of engage in this. But presumably you're saying, no, I'm organising it. I don't have to answer the question.
Exactly. The people coming will hopefully be better.
Yeah. How can people actually take part in this walkabout? Define the thing again, because it's the all the things
Christmas
you know.
Christmas quiz.
The Christmas quiz. Just the Christmas quiz.
Yeah.
How can people actually get involved with it then?
So you can find us on Instagram, so Santa's_entourage, and then there'll be a link to buy our tickets.
Santa's_entourage. That could be a bad stuff, really. Can you name all the Santa's reindeer?
I could try. I don't think I'd get them all.
Well, have a go.
Rudolph, Blitzen, yes. Dasher.
I'll give you a half a point for that. Blitzen, of course, in there as well, but it's all put together. And Jessica, have you ever been an elf?
I've never been an elf, but we will be on the 7th.
And do you not think there's going to be an health and safety issue with respect to that? Sorry, that's my attempt.
I hope not. I hope not.
Okay, excellent stuff. Are you online? Are you on the socials? So people will actually listen to this interview. How can they actually find out more about this Christmas quiz on December 7th at Walkabout?
Yeah, just our Instagram, Santa's Entourage. Best Santa's place. Entourage,
exactly. And did I get the date there? Was it December 7th or have I misread
yeah,
that?
Yeah, December 7th.
That's okay, because it's been a hectic time in all sorts of ways. And what will you be doing for Christmas, Jessica? What's the intention of the Morris household?
Just going back to my parents' house.
But all? That's no it. Celebrations planned? No wild and crazy illuminated sort of Santa things, effectively?
Keep it simple.
Okay, which is often the best way. Okay, excellent stuff. Any shout-outs for your fellow team members who are also helping to coordinate this quiz at Walkabout?
Yes, so Hermione and Brooke are also part of the marketing team. And then Jenny and Christy are the leaders of the group.
One other thing, in terms of the actual event itself, will you be allocating teams? Can people enter individually?
Yes, it's a minimum of two, maximum of six. So just come as people want.
So a minimum of two, so and a maximum of six, which is more of a group, really. And those good things will be there. Any prizes that you'd like to share with us?
So there's a number of prizes. So you can win. So it ranges from like a bottle of Absolut vodka. You could win a gaming experience at Carousel. There's a free consultation at Lush, and we have a few like gift baskets and gift sets that you can win.
I'm interested in the free consultation. Is that basically where you have a psychoanalytic session?
Yeah, I think it's like the skin and hair, finding the best products for you.
Got it. There we are. That's fine. Well, I mean, it's been awesome connecting with your good self with respect to that. We've got obviously all the details. You can go and follow the whole thing through and develop it from thence. When's the deadline for getting final tickets in there, or can people turn up on the night?
You can turn up on the night, but it'd be better to buy them beforehand.
Of course. And do you know who's the quiz master?
So it's been hosted by Tasty, one of the drag queens in Lincoln, because it's in connection with Lincoln Pride. So it'll be really special. It's not just a normal quiz. It's been hosted by drag queens as well, so it'll be really fun.
And have you encountered Tasty before?
Yeah, so our team leaders met up with her and had a meeting, given her our quiz questions and all aboard. So
well, there you are. Fantastic stuff. That's it then, Jessica. It's all over for the Thank moment. You. We look forward to having you come back and report on how successful the December 7th event has been. Happy Christmas.
Thank you. Happy Christmas.
Splendid. It still seems too soon, though. We're not even into Advent as yet. I know it's the shortest Advent for quite some time, but still. It's the Midweek Drive Live on Siren Radio, and we're delighted to welcome a newbie to the Midweek Drive Live, a quantum energy healer, frequency master, naturopathic doctor, and remote viewer, an internationally known frequency master, a conscious creation expert, and a naturopathic energy healer. It's a hearty welcome from the Midweek Drive Live team to Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. How are you, Kimberly?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Excellent. Great to connect with your good self, and delighted to have you make your debut. But there's an awful lot to unpack in terms of that there. So before I introduce you to the rest of the team, that's Tosin, Anna, and Hermione in the studio, and of course in Florida we have Kathy Manso, and in North Carolina Jessica Burtis. Just share with us a quantum energy healer. It sounds very woo-woo, which possibly is one aspect. Is it a case of it's not so much new age as actually just remembering things that we've lost in the past?
It's actually, when I say quantum, I'm really referring to the technology. So it's actually super scientific, and it can be used super woo-woo, which I like to play in the woo.
Yep, we just seem to have frozen for a moment there. I don't know, it was a quantum leap too far, perhaps. So are you still with us, Kimberly? Or have we just lost you in mid-quanta? No. Oh, it's very, very frustrating when that actually happens. Hopefully she will actually come back. Okay. I think you're back in line now. We missed you in I was going to say mid-quantum leap there, but we're analysing that as another program on another show later on. Just continue to share. How did you actually get involved with this aspect of our life experience in many ways?
Yeah, so I had a lot of health problems when I was a young mother, and there was a woman in Ohio, when I lived in Ohio, and she had a machine. It was a biofeedback machine. So I first kind of discovered frequency and quantum energy through her and through the difference it made in my life. Eventually, I owned a couple of the same machines. Now we have apps. You know, we can have things on our phone. There's a little aura on there. And so now we, you know, have these portable quantum devices that, you know, time is non-local, so there's no time and space. So I'm able to test people and run people all over the world. And it's pretty cool. So we do, like, as you know, as far down to nitty gritty medical stuff, emotional imbalance, psychological imbalance, programming. We can read past lives. We can read future lives. We can read all time and space. We can tell you what's happening at night that you don't know. We can, you know, we clear houses. We can look at property, animals. I mean, the sky's the limit because we're just frequency towers, and everything all the way back to what I call the all, some people call God, is frequency, light, color, and sound. Everything's made up of frequency.
A line we frequently use is that we're not so much human beings on a spiritual journey as spiritual beings on a human journey. Is that something you'd subscribe to?
Oh, 100%. Perfectly said. Well said.
Kathy Manso in Florida. Any questions from yourself?
Like 1,000, but well, we only have so much time, so I'll make sure to focus. I guess, what inspired you? Because you explained how you got started because it was with your own health problems, but what inspired you to keep on going that journey? Because that's, I mean, you said, I think you've been doing this for more than 25 years.
Oh, yeah. So, well, actually, you know, I'm a researcher, and I researched, and I was first a master herbalist and an organic gardener. And I started an international mail order company with herbal products with my ex-husband. And he was actually the one that said, I'm tired.
Again, frozen in mid-response.
But I paid for it. So I started my business, you know, basically on his suggestion. And I had quite a reputation in the United States and then became internationally known.
We're clearly having one or two challenges with respect to our
advice. So, you know, you might as well get paid.
You might as well get paid for sure.
Exactly.
I think we've got the gist of that, actually. We still have one or two sort of slight outages.
I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Jessica, let's turn to yourself. Anything you'd like to add whilst we stay on your side of the Atlantic?
Yes, you said that you were talking about like quantum devices. Can you explain a bit more about what that means? Because when I think quantum, I think of like space and Ant-Man. So would you, do you have any explanation for those of us who aren't familiar?
It's the anticipation that makes life interesting, I find. it's okay. I'm not sure whether we might actually invite Kimberly to sign back out and sign back in again, because we do seem to be having one or two challenges with respect to this link. Did you get the gist of that question, Kimberly? I think you're back with us now.
I did not hear it. What was the question?
Just talk to us about the quantum and how we actually developed that, because Jessica was thinking, obviously, of Ant-Man, Quantumania, other issues with respect to that. I mean, again, we talk about, obviously, I mean, go down to the level of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle and a whole stack of other things, etc. Is it all about the frequency that we're vibrating at, and that ultimately we need to be approaching the higher energy frequencies as opposed to the low energy depressing frequencies, the likes of which you're probably seeing manifested arguably in Ukraine, possibly in Gaza at present?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And, you know, we can also take it to the body with physical disease. You know, that's a lower frequency. However, it gets kind of dicey and tricky because it depends if we're looking at things like little picture, which is still quantum, or big picture, which we call quantum. And really, you know, when you go all the way back to, again, what people call God, you know, or I call the all, you know, everything comes from the all. So, you know, it's kind of hard when we start sorting things into categories, saying this is bad and this is good, because that's the 3D polarity here. You know, that's the density here, is actually that judgment that we put on people. You know, you are right, I am wrong, I'm going to make you wrong, I'm going to make me right. And, you know, we can get into, you know, what causes the conflict in wars, which is a whole nother, I think it's just a scripted reality. You know, I believe the Matrix is a documentary. So to me, everything that's happened is just a distraction and a script to keep us from going up to 5D. So people talk a lot about 3D or the material dense world, but actually we're at about 4.2 in the collective, which is really exciting. And if you guys have talked to young people, which I'm sure you have young people on your show sometimes, and, you know, even these young ladies are younger, and the young lady in your studio. But I mean, these people are awake, you guys. These people are like tapped in. They're amazing. They know things that I had no clue of when I was their age. So I'm really excited. A lot of people are really depressed about the state of the world, but I'm really excited. People are waking up and they're open. and they're seeing through the dimensions, and they're understanding that it's not just what you can see, touch, you know, taste, you know. So I think things are, you know, looking good for the world.
Okay, you've raised a couple of issues and points. Let's turn to Anna. Anna, you're a young person. I'm defining you as that. Obviously, you're from Romania. You're doing excellent work now. You've just been invited Chief Marketing Officer for the Lincoln Student Investment Company or firm, or fund. So in terms of your own experience, you always strike me as a fairly positive person. Is that essential? Do you resonate with some of the lines that Kimberly's been talking about there?
Well, firstly, thank you for calling me young. Yeah. I think it's a very
Look,
big compliment.
You're pretty good for 56, I think.
Yeah. Ah, thank you, yeah. A bit more and I'm going to have a wheelchair, but it's fine. Well, in terms of energy, I think I can resonate with the fact that I feel like sometimes when I meet certain people, my energy literally disappears. They take everything out of me. But
I know the feeling. Yeah, the classes I've taken in time.
There are some kind of people that, if I'm not wrong, I think they're called something like energy vampires or something like that. And in this, I truly believe, because there are some people out there that literally
suck the energy out of everything.
Exactly. But I do believe that you can create your own energy, because you can have the worst day of your life and you can still have a positive energy. And you saying that I have a positive energy makes me happy, because, for example, today I had such a bad day. But I think it's all about how you make yourself feel and how you want your day to be in order to...
Kimberly, I mean, Anna, obviously, interesting term, using energy vampires from Romania, given it's next door to Transylvania. We know the backstory of that one. Anything you'd like to comment on from Anna's thoughts there?
Oh, yeah, she said a couple amazing things. First, I have to remind myself this. I used to be like, you know, I'm having a really bad day and I'm depressed and I feel down and my mood is weird. And I used to think, well, maybe tomorrow will be better, or maybe tonight will be better. But I think she brought up a good point that we can like really choose our emotions or our mental attitude and recreate or create what we want at any time. So I think that was a beautiful point she brought up. And then I actually, on the technology, I write the software for the technology. I actually have energy vampire panels. And we are all energy vampires to each other, believe it or not, to some extent, whether we know it or not. Sometimes it's deliberate, sometimes it's not deliberate. And, you know, and then a lot of people are hooked and, you know, as she pointed out, literally drain us on purpose. Also, animals can drain you, and you can drain your animals. Places can drain you, and some places inspire you. So I think energy hygiene and being really conscious.
Kathy, you spent time, obviously, as we know, doing a lot of excellent work in Ukraine. Did you feel drained there? Did you feel energized? What was your kind of sense?
Oh, yeah, I haven't been asked that. Yeah, I guess a little bit of both. Mm. A little bit of both. It kind of depended on the day of what was happening. Mm. I think when I was truly busy, when I was doing the work that I really wanted to do, when I was going out to photograph or interview people or doing something like that, I had a lot of energy and I was ready to see something through into the end. But I think you start living, right? You start making friends, you start meeting up with people to go get coffee or get dinner or something like that. So you're very much living a life and putting the work aside, and you're talking to the people from everywhere, some Ukrainians, some from different parts of the world, and you get drained from that, because I was only there for a month, and the reality of other people being there for a year. So them talking to you about their experiences of the last year, the people they interact with or what they've seen and what they've done, I think that was more draining than me actually going to do the work that I was doing.
And that interactivity is, I think, critical to this. Tosin, Afrobeats, I know, is an energizing show every Sunday, 7 through 9, Siren Radio. Any questions from yourself?
About the draining energy, where we unintentionally drain people's energy, what do you think causes that, and how can we, like, kind of prevent that?
How can we stop draining other people's energy, Kimberly? Yeah. Oh, again, a frozen Kimberly and that sort of things. Anyway, we'll hopefully come back in that. Kimberly, did you get that question from Tosin?
No, I heard the beginning. I didn't hear the whole thing.
How can we stop draining other people's energy?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's being aware, because you can actually, you know, we can, when I look at...
It's quite extraordinary, really. It's like being in an American television show of the 1970s with freeze frames coming up every second for a commercial break. Never mind. Hopefully she'll be back with us. Jessica, any thoughts on what you're hearing at present in North Carolina? Is it something which you think, this is quite extraordinary, I want to follow this up?
I mean, I feel like a lot of people, no matter what we believe, we feel like definitely other people's mindsets and emotions 100% affect our own. And I feel like that's super true, especially going into the holiday season where a lot of people are celebrating a holiday coming up, whether it's New Year's or Christmas. So I think we're going to be around a lot of people, a lot of family, a lot of friends. There's going to be a lot of emotions. So I think it's good to consider. Mm.
And of course, post Thanksgiving, heading into the whole range of other activities for the festive season. I think, Kimberly, you're back with us now. Again, it's quite extraordinary, this connection. Clearly, in some way, shape, or form, we have a quantum disconnect between the Zoom room and yourself. But any observations, again, going back to Tosin's question about how can we kind of avoid being an energy vampire? Because we might sort of feel, I don't want to suck the energy out of a room.
Right. It's pulling your own energy into yourself, being aware, when you're casting, out and trying to get something outside of yourself, mentally, emotionally, or energetically from anyone other than yourself. It's learning self-love and self-nurture, really, to some extent.
Which is fairly critical. Hermione, again, as a young person from Southend, glamorous world of, any thoughts that you'd like to share with Dr. Kimberly?
I think it's just really interesting how, obviously you said that this is very scientifically based. If you were to tell me something about this without mentioning that it's scientifically based, I would never in my dreams believe that it would be based on science.
British skepticism would come across, perhaps.
Well, not necessarily skepticism, but I like you, Anna, I do genuinely think that some people can suck the energy out of you, whether it's a group of people, whether it's a
just not turning up
place. Yeah. Let's not get started.
No.
But I do genuinely believe in the fact that people can suck the energy out of you. But then to say that that's also backed up by science, I think that's incredibly interesting, and I would love to know more about that.
Mm. Kimberly.
Yeah, so it's just that everything has a frequency. So every action, every thought, every sentence, every word, every item, every object. And so, they're allowing us now to have access. You guys know this, just so much technology. I mean, my family, gets paid to do transfer of human consciousness and human cloning. So there's all this technology that a lot of us aren't aware of, but that they're making available. And look at your studio full of technology. We have our own technology that we hold in our hands. And so it's just, they're allowing us now, unprecedented technology that can basically tell us anything about anyone. I always tell my clients, if they knew what I could see about them, they'd never ever pay me to look at them, because I can see everything.
So again, you've raised the issue about technology that we're using, that we're connected to, but I'm fascinated by that line, your family's dealing with transferring of human consciousness into human clones. So that's pretty cutting edge speculative fiction material. Is that something which, again, you've gone through a journey with? Because obviously there have been lots of times over the years where people said that we're approaching singularity. We're doing this. You've said yourself that The Matrix, from your own perspective, is a documentary as opposed to a fact. I mean, does that mean, unless we take the blue pill or the red pill, we're doomed to kind of reiterate ourselves? Or is it a case of our little tiny minds can't cope with the notion of reality and the immensity of reality?
I would say both. We're limitless eternal beings, which is a whole nother conversation, as long as we have an eternal living soul in us. Of course, there's many people walking around, which I call NPCs or empty clones. And if you guys have ever encountered just people in general, I'm sure you can back me up. I mean, in America, you go to a restaurant and oh my gosh, the people there are just so blank. The families are blank, the children.
I thought mostly they went into politics and ended up running the country in the White House, didn't they? But so is that just a by the by? Just an observation there. Never mind, we have our own Rishi Sunak. Is he human? I don't know. Anyway, sorry, back to yourself, Kimberly.
No, but we have, there's technology, again, going back to technology.
If only we could go back to technology, which would continue the conversation in a way which didn't have these ultimate gaps in from that point of view. It's extraordinary. Maybe the universe is working through the process again. Is Kimberly going to return before we have to say farewell?
I think we're going to we're going to have that.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we got the gist of that. Kathy, back to yourself again in terms of any closing thoughts you'd like to put to Kimberly, about what I think is a fascinating metaphysical discussion about the whole life process that we're all sharing on the Midweek Drive Live.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess another question, or my final question, is because you've been doing this for literally decades now, and you've kind of had a rare opportunity to be practicing this as well as the development of social media and the development of more technology. I mean, we're the fastest we've ever been. So I'm kind of wondering, how is that paralleled with one another? And has it been difficult, especially since more people can reach out to you, whether they're supporting you or providing criticism?
Yeah, I have many detractors. And, you know, when you're a way shower, or you're kind of, you know, on the leading edge or cutting edge of introducing, even if things have existed a while, if you're bringing it to the forefront and really speaking out, you know, in a big way about it, you're gonna have a lot of criticism. Absolutely. A lot of haters on social media. I mean, a lot, you know, being called crazy. The only thing I know, again, with, you know, using my psychic abilities, I know everyone's going to be saying this in 5 years. Like, you're going to be like, remember that woman? Like, she was talking about this way back then. So I know all my shows are going to age well, and that's, you know, enough for me. And that goes back to what I was saying about energy vampirism is, you know, we've got to love ourselves and support ourselves and stand within our own being regardless. You know, if we're happy and we're doing what we want to do, we have to stop like outcasting and outsourcing, you know, opinion. You know, I mean, you know, there's that balance. We care what some people think, but we shouldn't care what everybody thinks.
Anna, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, that I would very much like to be able to clone myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. You see, I can't imagine a greater curse on the world than having a clone version of myself around, basically. I mean, I appreciate it. It'd be nice to...
I would literally really? Love it, because I would be able to do so many things that I am not able to, because I need to be in two places at once.
Yeah, but that's bilocation. If you practice the art of bilocation, as evidenced by Padre Pio, basically, then you can solve that bilocation
I'm
problem.
I'm going to
cloning.
Ask Tossi to show me what he did last time.
Yeah, we're working it together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kimberly, how can people actually follow you via the socials, or is there a website that you'd point people to find out more about your fascinating work?
Sure. SecretToEverything.com, spelled out T-O, you know, Secret to Everything on YouTube, or just type my name, Kimberly McGeorge, in Google, and I'm pretty out there, so yeah.
I'd say you're in here as well as out there simultaneously at the same time without the aid of a safety net, which is fantastic. So we've got two final questions for you. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on this Your Midweek Drive Live debut?
Oh, yeah, you guys are wonderful. I'm intelligent, sharp, awake. Good questions.
Well, you know, we have to keep the energy vampires out of the room before we actually get to the stage.
And young.
Speak for yourself, Anna. As an ancient soul, I just have to keep on going and hope for the best, really. So can we prevail upon you to come back and join us sometime in the not too distant future? Kimberly, will you return?
Yes, of course. You guys are great. I love it. I love you guys.
Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, huge thanks. Up next, we'll be talking about killing cancer kindly with Dr. Mohammed Muneeb Khan. and Linda Carlisle, who I believe once was a member of the Go-Go's. And then she went individually and solo and did Circle in the Sand and became an anthemic song for the 1980s. Kathy's still with us. How are you, Kathy? Are you sticking around for the next hour? Is it a case of no? Well, by the way, where are you? Are you? I mean, we presume you're in Florida. Are you in Orlando? Are you in Miami? Where's your location?
I am currently in Miami, and I should be in Miami for the next few weeks.
Oh, so Christmas in Miami, then?
Yes, Christmas in Miami. We're staying warm over here, although today it did drop to like 16,
really?
Which is crazy.
It was 0 degrees in Lincoln, so a very frosty day, and all sorts of other areas. The kind of day when you really don't want to actually lose your mobile phone, which of course happened to me, but thankfully it's back with me now, so that's all good. Otherwise, entire life collapses. Jessica, you okay for the next quarter?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Kathy, are you okay for the next quarter?
Unfortunately, no. I have to go.
There you go.
I have to leave you.
So has it
but
been...
next week, I'm going to be here for the full
two-hour
show.
Exactly.
Enough is enough.
7,200 seconds. Yeah. Yeah. None of this William Coles-esque, I'll just do an hour or so here, or half an hour there, fill the inners, et cetera, when I'm back from Malta. Great. Well,
it
have
just
you...
doesn't feel like me.
No. And have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer, Kathy?
I always have a reasonably interesting Zoomer with you.
So you'll be back again, as you've already said, next week, which is great. So, Kathy Manso, we salute you. Kathy, would you like to congratulate Anna, who has indeed become the Chief Marketing Officer for the Lincoln Student Investment Fund?
I, of course, would love to congratulate Anna. Anna, congratulations. I'm sure you deserve it.
Thank you.
Yes, I feel in so many ways. I mean, Kathy, you were a mature postgraduate student. Anna's a postgraduate student as well. It's all.
Should we compare ages? Would that make everyone feel better? Is this...
As we know,
is this
Kathy.
A game of
no,
who's the younger
no, no.
Or
we
the older?
We don't talk about chronological. We can't do that. At least not on a.
I thought we were transparent here at Siren Radio.
Well, of course we are. You know,
we are, but some things are better kept to ourselves.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
And of course, Tosin, congratulations to you, Tosin, because you got your results now, have you not?
Yes, I did. But
yes,
but
my award is not there.
Oh,
which is weird. Well, whatever. I'm done. And that's messed up.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. You have passed. You're sorted through with that. So good stuff on that basis. Excellent.
Thank you.
Well done. Hurrah, 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 hurrah. And up next, as promised earlier, hopefully, Phil Leonis, Hannah O'Brien, and Dr. Mohammed Muneeb Khan.
Looking for you, you were looking for me, always reaching for you.
Sense, the Trevor Horn production on Dollars Au L'Amour. As mentioned, we are delighted to welcome back to the programme for his first live session in terms of the studio panel. Normally, we've done a pre-record with Dr. Mohammed Munir Khan, a gentleman who's got a fascinating range of ways in which we can actually reduce the cancer risk substantially in a whole range of ways. Dr. Mohammed, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Alex. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a delight to be on your program.
Well, I mean, we like to feel as though we're saving lives, as we've said, because just a bit of background here in terms of the science. You are a consultant clinical oncologist at Queen's Centre for Oncology and Haematology at Castle Hill Hospital, of course. You had over 25 years of clinical experience in the field of general medicine and oncology, and you're also a consultant clinical oncologist. You know your stuff, let's face it. But would you like to just share with the team and our listener once again this notion that why is it that in Britain in particular, and possibly in the United States as well, Jessica's over in North Carolina at present, we seem to have such high rates of cancer? You know, what is the challenge with respect to that?
Yes, that is a very thorny issue for the health services. But before I start, I'd like to say that my work with the charity Killing Cancer Kindly is completely independent of my work with the NHS. So when I work in the hospitals you mentioned, I treat cancer. With the charity, I'm working on prevention cancer. And to be honestly, at present, I'm off work for the last many, many months. So I'm not working at these two hospitals. And I'm focusing more on my health and charity work and the books that I have written, two books. Coming back to the cancer risk, it is alarming and also amazing at the same time that the cancer risks are so high, but the health authorities are focusing more on the treatment and not on the rising cancer rates and their causes. In 1990s, the risk was about 25%, one in four people. In 2000, it went up to 33%. That is one in three people. By 2017, the risk has reached in England to almost 50%. So that is one in two people have a lifetime risk of getting cancer. America is catching up. They are in the late 40s, about 48% or something. Similarly, Australia has a very high risk. Scandinavian countries, 30% and rising. Canada is 30, 35%. And now they're estimating that the risk of cancer in the lifetime would be about 60% by 2030, and it will overtake any other disease, becoming the largest killer of mankind. So it's going to overtake cardiovascular disease, which is the number one killer right now. And as you said, for me, the driving force behind this charity, which is totally independent of my NHS work, is to find out what is causing it, why the cancer rate is going high. For human beings, this risk should be less than 5%. And when I started my work and I was asking these questions from professors and doctors and everyone else, they were all telling me, we are large mammals who live for a long time, so we've got to get cancer. If you live long enough, you're bound to get cancer. And that is the myth which is still around. So people are so scared of cancer, they don't even want to know how to prevent it. They are just focusing on the treatments available because the back of their mind, it has been ingrained that eventually everyone is at risk of getting cancer. Not true. I have studied the database from elephants in San Diego Zoo. They have an elephant cancer database for all the elephants which are kept in captivity around the world or domesticated for work. They're large animals, live up to 60, 80 years. They outlive some of the humans. And their cancer rate is less than 5%. And there are human communities, which we call indigenous primitive societies, where cancer rate is less than 5%, close to 1%. Hmm. So there is something we are doing wrong. In fact, there are a lot of things we are doing wrong, which are leading to this increased risk of cancer. And I have worked on collecting information data for 14 years and put it in two books. One is a very comprehensive manual. If you allow me, I'll give you the names. Otherwise, you can take the names yourself because it sounds like a shameless plug for the book.
No, please, by all means. I mean, it's important to address those factors. In fact, we'll come back to that. Anna, in Romania, what you know, from the Romanian perspective, any questions you'd like to put to Dr. Khan?
Yes, actually. There is a saying going around that eating meat is one of the reasons for cancer. And I hear a lot of people that stopped eating meat because of this. And I want to know, what do you think about that? Is meat a reason for getting cancer?
Excellent question, Anna. Firstly, are you from Romania?
Yeah.
I want to thank you and your nation, and I'd like you to convey to your nation. Recently, I had a news story coverage about roles of synthetic vitamins with cancer, and synthetic multivitamins have shown in some studies to raise the risk of cancer by 30%. And in our international coverage, Romania gave us a very good coverage. So people in Romania are very intelligent and health conscious, and I salute them. Thank you very much. Now, mate, if you'd ask this question to any other medical specialist or oncologist, maybe 9 out of 10 or maybe 99 out of 100 won't even know what you're talking about, because mate is not something which is used commonly in England. I presume when you say mate, you're referring to the herb which is known as mate in the Middle East and comes from Argentina.
I think it's a slight loss in translation. I think she was referring to meat.
Yes.
Carnivorous things that we actually tend to eat. Yeah. And if you eat
Wonderful.
Meat, you might work on that basis. Just helping sort of solve the little translation there. Carry on.
We'll cover both. Mate or mate is a tree which is brewed from a plant substance from leaves in Argentina and drank a lot in the Middle East too, because a lot of Middle Easterns went to Argentina. That has shown to increase the risk of cancer in some studies. And the mate or mate tea, which is now available in cans in America, especially in some parts of England, that should be regulated. I think the reason for that is because they were drinking it very hot. Any temperatures above 65 degrees centigrade, whether it's tea or coffee or any beverage that we all drink, hot chocolate, that increases the risk of esophageal or food canal cancer. Meat, coming back to meat, yes. In traditional society, like for example, the Inuits, which when I was a kid, they wrongly called them Eskimos, but I'm giving the reference to people of my age who would not know what an Inuit is. So First Nations of Canada, Native Americans or Inuits, the risk of cancer was almost around 1%. And those people only eat meat and blubber and fat. I mean, they don't have fruits and vegetables. They didn't traditionally. Since they started moving to the cities and adopted a modernized lifestyle, their cancer rate has gone up to 30% within two generations. So meat by itself is not bad. It's how we preserve it. When we add preservatives to the meat, we add those salts and chemicals and all those fancy kind of products, the E numbers and whatever. You look at the meat, it's a chunk of meat, but it has got 28 different additives to it. Those chemicals, they prolong the shelf life of the meat, but they reduce your and my lifespan. And that's where the problem comes up. So the more the meat is processed, the more is the risk of having damage to health and cancer. And also the way we raise animals now is very different. So we are feeding cows proteins from fish and bones and offals of other cows and other animals like sheep. Now, cows were not supposed to eat bones or fish or liver and lung residues of other animals. But we feed them that because it's high in protein, they grow quickly. We want to grow them quick and big and then cut them and sell them. We don't want to waste time. We want to maximize profit. That has changed the composition of the modern meat. So the ratio between the healthy and unhealthy fat, the omega-3s and omega-6 has switched. Same has happened with chicken. We are feeding chicken animal protein, which they were not designed to digest. And again, although the chicken tastes like chicken, but we don't know if it really tastes like the real wild chicken where it should be an eating grain. So cows should be eating grass. Chicken should be eating grain. We are feeding grain to the cows and meat to the cows and meat and other stuff to the chicken. And that's where the ratios are becoming abnormal and they're causing inflammation and unhealthy results in our life. So it's not meat per se. If you have organic, natural, free-range, farm-raised kind of meat, or you get it from the wild, like venison, like you get deer meat, it's perfectly fine. And even fish, I'm coming to fish. Farm-fed fish are totally different from wild-caught fish. So when I go to buy fish, I go for the wild-caught fish. Because first, they move a lot, so their meat is leaner. It has less fat because they're moving in the ocean or in the lake, whereas the farm fish is moving in a tank. Then their diet is varied, so the taste is better because they've been eating all kind of nutrients, whereas the farm fish is getting the same diet every day. So the taste of that meat is very monotonous. So the risk of cancer goes high with the processing of the food and the way we produce the food. But thank you for the question. We also covered mate or mate. That is a very popular drink in South America and North America and Middle East.
It's part of the whole program. I'm going to bring in another one of our American correspondents, if it's okay, Dr. Khan. That's Phil Leonis, ACE director and producer and violence prevention specialist, of course, in Los Angeles, and podcaster. Phil, you've been listening to Dr. Khan sharing his thoughts there. I mean, obviously, the Killing Cancer Kindly charity is something we're going to go on to discuss further. Any thoughts or questions from yourself?
So many thoughts. I am so glad that I read the rundown and I knew that the topic was about Killing Cancer Kindly. Otherwise, because I arrived late, when I heard him say hunk of meat, I naturally thought that was my introduction.
That's so true.
You know, I just got back from a trip to Malta, to Tuscany, you know, culinarily speaking, and I just made up a word. Was trying very hard to cover all the bases and check off all the boxes of embracing simple food, local cuisine, not Michelin star restaurants, but how the locals eat. And it was extraordinary because the number of courses, the type of meals, they are different than we have here in America. Halfway through my first lunch in Tuscany, I actually said, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it through this trip. It's too much. I actually lost weight. My digestion was better. You mentioned the preservatives in meat, which I want to get to, but even in wines locally, I would drink wines with everything. I mean, they have wine with breakfast, for crying out loud. But you wake up the next day not feeling, I mean, you had the sleep of when you were a baby because there's no preservatives. It's stunning. And, you know, you read these things, you hear these things, but until you experience it and until you have the opportunity to probably, I imagine, get all your personal habits out of your system, so that your taste can reset, your digestion can reset. It's extraordinary. And if I sound excited, I am, because it is possible to eat a wide array of foods, to eat often, to eat, not to starve yourself, and to get healthier, and to lose weight, and to feel Absolutely. Better. And it's perspective.
Excellent analysis, and you have covered such a vast subject by saying that. And I love that new term you have introduced, which is a combination of culinary and what did you say? I want to write it down.
Look, this is why they invite me, is for the interesting word usements I structure. I do have a specific question, if I may. I attended, and it's fascinating because I had a reoccurrence of this ailment this past week, realizing I'm allergic to a food. But I, about 6 years ago, I attended a pig roast in Northern California that a dear friend was throwing. And I thought this had never been something I'd been interested in, but it was a big deal in their family. And I am, you know, you've heard of vegetarian, you've heard of pescatarian. I'm a flexitarian. When I go somewhere, I will eat whatever anyone wants to serve me, because I'm going to learn more about you by embracing what you want to feed me. But I had this experience walking the grounds and getting to see where the pigs were raised before being served. And I experienced such terror in those settings, in those pens. You talk about the fish farms and farms, you know, fish in tanks. Am I imagining this, or do we consume the emotional well-being of the animals as well. If an animal is experiencing terror in their life, discomfort in their life, am I consuming that? I know that this might have been a better question for a quantum researcher, but I just, because I know that fear affects my mental and physical well-being, does it affect the physical well-being of the animals we're eating?
This is a very intelligent question, and this is one of the areas of my interest, how your feelings and your mind affects your body. Now, let me tell you, when we are terrorized, you and me, our body secretes adrenaline. How does it secrete adrenaline? It secretes it from the cells. It's a chemical which gives a fight or flight reflex. How did it secrete it from the cell? There are some genes in the nucleus which get turned on. So those genes were silent before. We turned on the genes by emotions. That's epigenetics, the new science. Now, trust me, your mind can alter your body. And here's the proof. When you are fearful or when you're happy, you secrete different chemicals. Under fear, you secrete adrenaline. Under happiness, you secrete endorphins. And I'm sorry to tell you this terrible, terrible story, excuse me, that Chinese and Japanese realized centuries ago that the animals' fear can change the quality and taste of meat. So they used to, I hope they don't do it now or it's not acceptable, they used to beat the animal to secrete more adrenaline in their meat before cooking them or killing them to cook. And some of these cultures also cook live animals for the same reason, that their fear and their anguish can release some chemicals which can make the meat more tender. That's what they believe. But science is now showing us this is true. Our genes get switched on by our emotions. And you mentioned your Mediterranean trip to Malta, one place I am planning to go. In my book, when I was writing my book, and funnily, it's called You Will Wish You Were an Elephant Killing Cancer Kindly. So writing that book, I realized that everything which stops cancer also makes you younger and live longer and healthier. So I started looking at three communities across the globe. Everyone knows about the Mediterranean region. People live longer and they're healthier. And in Sicily, there are people, there's a certain area with some villages where people live above 100 as a general rule. So I looked at their diet and their lifestyles. Then in California, there was a study done by University of South California. I picked up that study and looked at an area called Linda Loma, where people live very long lives compared to the rest of the America. And in Japan, there is Okinawa, where people regularly cross 100 very commonly. And there were similarities in their diet. Now, the Mediterranean diet is very high in olive oil. That is very healthy. And that olive oil offsets a lot of unhealthy things in your diet. And they drink organically made wines, they drink healthy beverages, and even their bread is very thin. It's like that paper they use to put the music notes on, and they even call it by that name. So it's not just what you eat, but where it's coming from, how you eat and when you eat. The duration of gap between two meals is extremely important. You can overeat and be healthier and have less weight and live longer than person who are eating less if you eat with a big gap. So all these things I've discussed in my book, and I've talked about it, what is the role of gaps between meals. And intermittent fasting is now becoming a big area of research, although we don't recommend it on the NHS. We are waiting for big trial results to come in. But it's a big area of research. So we are peckish all the time. And every time you eat, your body secretes insulin, which brings in insulin-like growth factor, which helps cells grow. And the biggest cause of aging is glucose. What happens as the years go by is that glucose, excess of glucose, starts binding to the proteins and other structure elements in the body and starts to make them rigid, like the skin loses its flexibility. And that repair system of the body is going down, but the glucose consumption is going up. And that's why we age prematurely. It has been known in diabetics, if they have uncontrolled diabetes, they age prematurely. They get cataracts much earlier than other people. They get kidney disease and kidney failures and atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries and high blood pressure at a much younger age. But if they control their glucose levels well, they age like the normal population. So glucose, if somebody asked me what is the one cause of aging, my answer would be glucose. So, and we are full of refined sugar. They chuck it in every food, even in meat, they chuck sugar because it's a good preservative and it's cheap.
This is clearly not good news, Jessica, for your sweet tea campaign to actually enhance the world with sweet tea from North Carolina. Any thoughts from yourself, Jessica, you'd like to add to Dr. Khan before we bring in Tosin and, of course, Hannah?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the sweet tea, I know it's bad for me. I can't quit it, but I am lucky enough to live in a region in the U.S. that has a lot of farmers markets, and hunting's pretty common here, too. But I do think the discussion around food is so interesting, and thank you for discussing it. I actually have a bit of a different question. I was curious about, I think there's a lot of concern around, say, like shampoo and dry shampoo and perfume and cosmetics in stores that people feel have certain chemicals in them that are not so good for us. And I know recently there was a recall on aerosol shampoos, deodorants, and sunscreens from some companies because they were shown that they were causing cancer. And I was curious about your thoughts on that, on those products.
Yes, I mean, this is a big topic. And firstly, Jessica, my apologies for apparently spoiling your sweet campaign. But I'll tell you what, have your sweets. I never, ever tell my friends, family, and patients not to have sweets. It's not the amount of sweets you eat, it's how often you take them. Now, sugar and sweets are antidepressants. Give a candy to a kid and watch him after 10 minutes. He'll be jumping up and down on the sofa. Same happens to you and me, but we are a little bit inhibited, so we're going to not jump. But inside, we're having the same emotion. Sweets are great. They're mood elaters, and that's how they were used traditionally. So you had sweets on Christmas. You had sweets on Easter, on Purim, on Eid festival or Diwali festival. Happiness, you wanted to double the happiness by having sweets. It was like having an alcoholic drink to give you a bigger boost. That's how they should be used. And initially, when sweets came to the market, they were only for special occasions. Somebody had passed an exam, the baby was born, somebody getting married, you're having a party. That's how sweets should be. They're not called treats for nothing. The trouble is when you're having Christmas six times a day. You're having pudding and you're having ice cream and you're having sweets every 2 hours. That's the problem. I mean, if you have had a gap all day and you are going to have sweets, it's perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. I have a simple suggestion. Again, I've put it in my book for all the readers, and many have come back and said they loved it. I said, whenever you're going to have a meal or you're going to eat something, have a fruit or a vegetable, maybe a tomato or something, anything you like, a cucumber. And then eat whatever you want to eat. It'll fill you up. It has antioxidants. And if there are any chemicals or preservatives in the food, it is going to detoxify them or at least combat them. What we tend to do is we have a big meal and then we take the fruit and vegetable. So the poor banana or the orange is chasing the food in front. And all the body enzymes have been used in digesting the processed meat we ate, the sausages and stuff. And there's not much left to digest the fruit. So again, sweets, there are many forms of sweets. You can have sweet apples, although some of the sweet apples don't taste sweet at all in America. I know about that. So go for any sweet variety of apples, like gala apples and stuff. You can have honey. That's a perfect sweetener. And yes, you can have refined sugars, but with a gap. Maybe have sugar-free days and then have, and you'll enjoy it more. Have your day, Friday should be celebratory day.
And the challenge, Doc, is based on what you said before, how much fructose is in food that we don't even know about. So that's the big thing, is it's all, you know, we can choose to have sweet and to celebrate something and to enjoy ourselves, but it's almost like often our food is being, you know, it's like, it's we're, what's the phrase, given a Mickey, like somebody's spiking our drink.
Yeah.
And we don't even know it.
Let's bring on somebody who actually is in the food industry after having a degree in journalism, of course. Where else would you go? Hannah O'Brien, any thoughts for yourself? And clearly you don't have to identify which part of the food industry you're actually in.
I mean, I work in the ice cream industry, so fairly high sugar. I won't name brands.
No. Any thoughts or questions on what you've heard so far, Hannah?
Just completely in agreement that sweet foods, yeah, have them, but have them in moderation. It's not something that you're meant to be having all the time, every day, every meal. It's something to have as a treat and in balance with a good diet. I frequently have a conversation with people that I work with saying, look at the list of ingredients. If sugar, glucose, fructose, dextrose are like high up in the ingredients list, or number one even, then you need to think about how much of that food that you have.
Tosin,
I couldn't agree more. Alex, can I have
yes, carry on. Go on.
I did not answer Jessica about the chemicals and other things that we put on our body. The largest body organ is not the liver, it's not the lungs, it's not the bowel, it's the skin. Skin is your largest body organ. Skin also absorbs stuff into it. You can put medicine on it, gets absorbed. So any chemical you apply to your skin can get absorbed. In fact, if when you put bath salts with magnesium and lie in them for 10, 15 minutes, you get better absorption of magnesium from the skin than you do by eating magnesium tablets. So we ignore that. So Jessica, you're very right, if you're still there listening, that those chemicals which we add for maybe for commercial purposes, again, most biggest reason for adding chemicals is extending the shelf life or making them smell better or look better, coloring agent and stuff. When they go to the skin, they can be absorbed and they can affect your body. And we know mercury gets absorbed through skin. So there are many other toxins which get absorbed. Ice cream, I love ice cream. I have it maybe once a week and I really enjoy it. And when I used to have it every day, I didn't used to enjoy it. So that's another thing. If you have too much of the sweet stuff, you lose the taste for it. It's a good mood later. It's been around for centuries. Now, the reason why I am saying this is that cancer rates were very low before. The Middle Easterns, the Turks and the Arabs and the Levantines and the Persians, they were taking fruit and they were putting fruit juice in it, and they were freezing it, and they were putting ice in it. They knew how to make ice. And they called it sherbet. And from this sherbet comes sorbet. That's where the sorbet got invented from. Later on, people decided to put milk into it. Now, remember, most of the world population is lactose intolerant. So Chinese food, there's no milk. Vietnamese food, Thai food, South Indian food, you don't have any milk. But Arabs, Mongols, Turks, and Northern Europeans are lactose tolerant. African and Asians, 65% of the world population can't digest milk when they cross the age of 2 years. When the Arabs, Turks, and Mongols, and Northern Europeans got their hand on ice cream, the sherbet or the sorbet, they added cream to it, and they made ice cream. Voila. And that is a norm now. Many people have ice cream, and they get tummy pains and cramps, and I would say more than half of the tummy problems, the bloating, the indigestion, and the feeling heavy after meals is due to lactose, which majority of the people are not able to digest. I know a lot of people, many of my patients who are lactose intolerant. And once they've been careful with that, and when they're choosing the ice cream, they go for the dairy-free version or lactose-free version, they digest it better and they enjoy it more. But comfort eating is a way of getting depression down. And one of the reasons why we eat sweets is we are depressed. So find someone who can deal with your mental health, a psychologist or psychiatrist, and get advice. And I've also put recently, my team has worked, we've got psychologists and psychiatrists on the Killing Cancer Kindly team. And we have worked out 7 seconds treatment to make you feel better. So if you're feeling sad and if you're feeling low, all you have to do is look up for 7 seconds. Count to 7 or say anything. 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, or you can call Hail Mary, Jesus, Allah, Muhammad, whoever you have positive connotations with. 7 seconds of looking up, your mood gets better. You know why? You cannot cry when you're looking up. Think of that. It's been there for centuries. When you look down, you cry. People who cry, they look down. And when you want to console someone, a child or loved one, you lift their face up to stop them crying. You never push their head down and console them. You always lift your face up. And that's where the English term comes from. Chin up. Chin up. So when you're craving sugar, sweets, and ice cream next time, chin up. Look up for 7 seconds. You might start feeling better, and maybe you'll go for a banana or an apple instead of the ice cream. Most of the time, we are trying to treat ourselves. Your body's telling you, you're depressed, need the sugar rush, need the quick fix. But that only lasts for half an hour or 1 hour, and then it's gone. And then you need another fix and another fix. And before you know it, you're trying to fix your mood with sugar and food. And that's not the healthy way.
Hence the acronym, Terrible Results, Eating All That Sugar for All for Treats. Terrible Results, Eating All That Sugar. Tosin from Nigeria, from Nigerian perspective. Any thoughts you'd like to share from what you've been listening to
so far? I'd say first is thank you for this, because I think we all focus on treatment of cancer more than the prevention of it. And for you taking a step is a really big deal. And I've learned a lot today. But the thing that caught me the most was when you're seeing the numbers of like the countries that are at risk of cancer. And I was going to ask you, do you know the like numbers in Africa? Because I know it's kind of underreported there, but there is a lot of cases of cancers that go under the radar and people don't really talk about. And just if you can shed a light on the continent of Africa and cancer, its relationship with cancer, basically.
Africa is one of the focus areas for killing cancer currently. I have a lot of Nigerian friends inside and outside the medical profession. By the way, are you from Abuja or Lagos? I get Lagos.
Lagos.
Okay. Are you an Igbo?
No, Yoruba.
Yoruba. Okay.
You know your stuff.
I know my stuff. I wanted to say that to tell you that yes, we have a genuine interest. I know the northern race is the Hausa.
Yes.
Then you've got the Yoruba and the Igbo.
Yes.
And I'm usually very good at picking up the Yoruba, Igbo, and Hausa, but here I got a bit wrong. Africa, cancer rates are rising because the lifestyle is changing. The healthy diet is no more. Everyone is getting into the modern lifestyle and modern diet. I hate to say the Western diet or Western lifestyle because it's not Western anymore. It's become global. I see more of it in the Middle East and China and Japan than I see in England. So rates are rising in Africa. Not a lot of work is being done. There's no data up till now what the percentage is. I've got data for India that is around 11% lifetime risk of cancer. South Africa, 20% risk of lifetime risk of cancer. And you can compare it to England, where it's 50%. So there's something going on. In the Middle East, Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and all these areas, their risk is about 9 to 10%. So there's a big variation across the globe. I would suspect the African rate is, apart from South Africa, it is somewhere between 10 and 20%. South Africa, you know, is a very different part of Africa. They have a very different kind of
ecosystem,
as you call it, and economic system too. Nigeria is the most populous country. One out of five Africans are Nigerians. And that's where we are focusing. I've got friends. One of them is from Abuja and one is down from Lagos, and they are helping me to contact people for collecting data in Africa. But this is going to be a big threat. Also, in the Nigerian diet, again, milk is playing a big role now. Cheese, milk, cream. Lactose powder is cheaper than sugar, and it's sweet, and it acts like sugar. So when the milk is getting expired, they convert it into a dry powder and sell it to food companies who chuck it in everything. And most of the African kids and grown-ups, when they eat this refined food, they have tummy pains and they have nausea and they have bloating and they feel unwell and tired because they can't digest the lactose. So that is also a major concern in Asia and Africa, that our food is being laced with lactose and people are getting a lot of gastric problem and bacterial overgrowth. Now, the cancers in Africa are slightly different. Many of them are infectious diseases, viruses, hepatitis C, hepatitis B virus-led cancers. Many of them are due to bacterial and parasitic infections. In Egypt, which is part of Africa, North Africa, they have bladder cancers due to a bug called Schistosoma hematobium, fancy name for a bug which grows in the bladder and causes bleeding from the bladder. In fact, the funny story here, Alex, when Napoleon went with his troop and doctors to Egypt, he found that the men were peeing blood in their urine. Wow. So his doctors did a lot of research and came to the conclusion that African men also menstruate like women.
Yeah. Didn't so get that in that Ridley Scott's latest movie on Napoleon, but never mind.
I hope they covered it. I haven't seen the movie. Yeah, I hope they covered that. Definitely. It was a German who went and found out, no, not all African men pee blood. It's just the northern Egyptians, and it's a bug which grows, a parasite which grows in the bladder. And they named the disease after him. It's called Bilharzia. Sounds Arabic, but it's after, named after a German guy. And that is one of the biggest risks of bladder cancer in Egypt. So our causes of cancer are different, but cancer rates are there and they are rising. And we are adding the modern day lifestyle causes to it. So we are adding the smoking, bladder cancer, traditionally caused by the parasite Schistosoma in Egypt, is now overtaken by smoking led bladder cancer. So as the lifestyles are changing and becoming more unhealthy, modernized in an unhealthy way, our paradigm is also shifting of cancer, and we're getting different cancers which were not present in our countries before. And the infrastructure is not there. I mean, it is essential for developing countries to have the resources put on prevention and early detection, because that costs pennies, rather than treatment, which causes millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars and pounds to give treatment to the cancer patient. And even for the Western world, I think it's important, because if somebody told me they've got a grand cure for cancer and then offered me a cancer, I'd say, no, thank you. If I've got a spare tire in my car and I have a breakdown service, which is excellent, I would still not want to break down or have a punctured tire or a flat tire. So why have cancer if you've got better treatments available? And by the way, we're still struggling with treatments.
Dr. Khan, it's been, as we knew it would be, awesome, as it always is from that point of view. Again, the book, You Will Wish You Were an Elephant, Killing Cancer Kindly. We still haven't had a chance to feature Hermione. We've got other areas to focus on. But have you had a reasonably interesting debut on the Midweek Drive Live, given that this is your first live team-based package that you've been involved with, as far as Siren Radio is concerned?
Love it. I absolutely love it. And I love the guests you have. Alex, you've always been a wonderful host, one of the best radio hosts in the world, I'd say. I've been abroad. I've done radio programs abroad. And I'm telling you, your way of conducting the show is marvelous and remarkable. They can learn a lot from you in England and outside of England. And there's another book, I'd say the second book has come out. It's called The How, What, and Why of Cancer, Separating Fact from Fiction. And last but not the least, it's always a pleasure coming here, but I have to give the disclaimer again. My work with Preventing Cancer and Killing Cancer Kindly is independent of my work with NHS.
Indeed.
And I was working as a locum consultant with the hospitals Castle Hill and Scarborough, but I'm not working there at present. I'm off due to health reasons. And also, I'm not using the title consultant anymore. I prefer to be called a clinical oncologist. I'm a humble person. I want to stay that way.
Well, Dr.
So
Khan,
no locum consultant, just a clinical oncologist.
Can we look forward to featuring you again in the very near future? Will you be kind enough to come back again? I think we've actually sort of lost it with that whole sort of system. We knew we were going to head down for that routine. Never mind. Part four will happen very soon.
Anyone who ever loved could look at me. Know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed could look at me and know I dream of you. Knowing I love you so. Anyone who had a heart would take me in his arms and love me too. Say, this time it's goodbye, dear. Loving you the way I do, I take you back. Without you, I'd die, dear. Knowing I love you so.
procrastination, other aspects. Yeah. Who knows what we could do with respect to that? Well, I think our next guest certainly does. Commenting, obviously, on a survey by Fisherman's Friend, which suggests that actually we should be more spontaneous. We're delighted to welcome ace psychologist Donna Dawson back to the programme. How are you, Donna?
I'm very well. It's good to be back. Thank you.
Well, likewise. And were you surprised by this very affirmative statement that actually more and more of us want to say yes more often? And certainly when we get into our 30s and 40s, we regret that we haven't said yes earlier in our lives.
Well, I can completely understand it because I'm part of the same syndrome as well. And in fact, in this survey, which was cheekily called Whatever the Day Throws at You, 9 out of 10 Brits said they did feel as though they had held themselves back, either from a lack of confidence or a fear of failure. And they actually thought that on the whole, they passed up opportunities about once a day, making about 400 times a year they passed up on things that they might have wanted to do. The 18 to 24 year olds were the most confused and regretful. And I think because opportunities are probably surrounding them thick and fast and they really don't know which way to go. However, by the time you reach the magic age of 33 and your 20s are behind you and you've worked out possibly your career and your relationships, you are beginning to think that you can say yes an awful lot more often to those things you actually want to do, as opposed, Alex, to the things we say yes to, which we feel obligated to say yes to. That's a different kettle of fish.
Very much so. Certainly working in the world of higher education, I can certainly attest to that, but that's another story entirely. In terms of the top 10 things that people wish they'd said yes more often to, I see a new job, ending a relationship, starting a healthier diet, spending more time with your family, more time with loved ones, making time to catch up with friends, going on adventures, accepting health, learning new skills, and travel opportunities. I suppose that can be summed up in the classic line, nobody said on their deathbed or on their tombstone, I wish I'd spent more time in the office.
Exactly. Some of these things, like travel opportunities, which was in first place, probably need a little planning and some organization, as opposed to spontaneity. However, and you know, travel plans can be expensive and they can be time consuming. But the second placed item, which was learning new skills, is something that's all within our capabilities. And it's something that we shouldn't shy away from. It was interesting that men had more feelings of fear and being overwhelmed and vulnerable when taking up new opportunities than women. Women seem to be able to embrace it with feelings of excitement and bravery and even, dare I say, optimism. However, further down the line, the tables get turned when it turns out women regret more things when they look back, as opposed to the men who have managed somehow to let them go. But, you know, that doesn't surprise me that men are more wary because they're judged more on their actions. They're expected to have it more together. In Western society, particularly, men are judged on what they do, and they're not supposed to be vulnerable. And what was interesting is third on the list was accepting help. Now, I think this is something that men do have a problem with in general, not saying every man does, but in letting people know they're vulnerable, it is quite difficult, and particularly in our society. And what adds to all this, Alex, is that when we're younger, we get within the recesses of our mind a little negative voice that grows. And it grows because of all the negative input we receive from when we're kids. You know, you can't do that. You probably won't be able to do that. You'll never finish that. You shouldn't even try that. And basically, we listen to this voice almost automatically now without questioning it. So when the little voice says, oh, no, you can't do that, or put it off, we accept it. Instead of which, you know, we should stand back, challenge it and say, why not? Why can't I do that? What's the issue? And what happens if I don't do it? If I fail? This big thing about failure, I find interesting because failure is the one thing that helps us to grow and mature and gives us the lessons in life that we need. It doesn't happen when you're successful and happy and everything's going well. It happens when you get things wrong, because then you can stand back and say, how do I tackle this as a problem? What other options do I have? And it may be even the time to take advice from people who have succeeded and learn from them. So this is where we grow and mature. And this is why we mustn't be afraid of it. Who said you have to achieve something on the first try?
I don't know, honestly, Donna. I don't know who said we have to achieve something on the first try. Nevertheless, failure is not falling down. Failure is staying down. Jessica and Phil. Wow, so many things to pack into. We wouldn't even reach the end of Dr. Khan's piece there. We lost the whole sort of Zoom connection. But Jessica, it's time for you to summarise the show. Who's going to be the most valuable contributor? Again, I think you've got another tough call. Jessica, over to you.
All right. So in our first half hour, Victoria Simmons and Chloe Rose had a successful concert this past weekend in Lincoln. Tosin, who congratulations, has finished his postgrad. Anna and Hermione were on-site correspondents, and they agreed that the show was amazing. 2023 is the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who, and there are TV specials to celebrate it, like the episode Star Beast. The studio is apparently divided on the subject. Some are Doctor Who fans, and some aren't as familiar. Alan joined us to discuss, not David Tennant, he's a controversially not a David Tennant fan. But he says Doctor Who is very much an in-space program with some filmed on Earth, but most stories aren't set in contemporary England. He says that TV shows used to get 5 million views on average before 2015, but Doctor Who got 7 million. However, 2015 it brought a large drop. The decreasing viewership for the show could be because of trends for television, not just because of the Doctor Who plot. He struggled to rate the new specials and said it's going back 13 years ago and picking on some plot threads from then. So if you grew up with that era, you'll probably like it, but it doesn't reconcile with the comic strip. He rated Star Beast about a 7. William Coles' favorite Doctor is Tom Baker, and Kathy's favorite is David Tennant. Kathy's cryptic crossword clue today was Sugar Maple, and Alan got it right away. In our second half hour, Jessica Morris joined us to discuss the Christmas quiz at Walkabout on December 7th in support of the Lincoln Pride charity with a Lincoln drag queen hosting. You'll need a minimum of 2 people and a maximum of 6 for your team. Prizes include gift baskets, a lush shop consultation, and absinthe vodka. For the fabulous Christmas quiz, you can buy tickets online at Santa's_entourage. Jessica will be headed home for Christmas, saying she wants to keep it simple. Kimberly McGeorge, a quantum energy healer, joined us on the radio for her debut. She says that as a young mother, she had a lot of health problems and she started dabbling with frequency machines at a friend's suggestion, and she felt that they made a difference. She says that they can look at people's health concerns, but also at their own properties and animals. She's been doing this for 25 years now and is also an organic farmer and has an organic business that grew from being well-known in the US to being well-known internationally. Kimberly says it's difficult to sort things into categories of good and bad when it comes to the quantum, and she feels that younger generations have a lot of awareness and hope for the world. Anna brought up the idea of energy vampires, people who tend to just drain others of energy. She says that you can change how you feel and the energy you give off. Kimberly agrees and says that a key component of overcoming being an energy vampire is self-love. In the third half hour, Dr. Mohammed Manib Khan joined us, a clinical oncologist who returned to the radio for his first live Zoom. He was an NHS local consultant oncologist with years of experience in the field of clinical oncology, and now he helps independently with the charity Killing Cancer Kindly for cancer prevention. Dr. Khan says that there is more care done in treatment for cancer instead of its prevention and early detection. In England, cancer risk is unusually high, with 1 in 2 people having a cancer risk in their lifetime, and some other countries also have high risks too, such as the US catching up to England and in the 40s percentage range, with Canada and Scandinavia also catching up in the 30s percent range. Even though not all countries are as high risk as those, it's still rising all over the world, and different countries have different cancers taking precedence that weren't there before, such as Egypt having more bladder cancer. Cancer is set to overtake cardiovascular conditions as the biggest cause of death in humans. For humans, Dr. Khan says that the cancer risk should be less than 5%. Dr. Khan says that very hot drinks, for example, above 65 degrees centigrade can increase our risk for esophageal cancer. When it comes to the subject of meat, as Philernis also brought up with preservatives, Dr. Khan says that it matters how we preserve and that some things can preserve meat, but they end up harming humans. And it also matters how animals are raised, such as wild-caught versus farmed fish. On the subject of sugar, he made it clear that he is not against it, but says treats should be just that, treats, and we should space out how often we eat sugar and try to focus on natural sweets like fruits and honey. He suggests using Friday as a treat day, or you can look up for 7 seconds and see if your mood is better, hence the old term chin up. And finally, in our fourth half hour, a survey from Fisherman's Friends. And I have to ask, is this Fisherman's Friends like the movie about Cornish fish?
No, it's a cough sweet that effectively fishermen obviously like to suck on when they're actually doing some fishing. Actually, no fishermen's are ever harmed in the making of Fisherman's Friends.
Excellent. I was wondering if it was a cough drop or the movie. So a survey from Fisherman's Friends says we should be more spontaneous. Donna Dawson joined us to discuss the importance of saying yes. She says that British adults pass up an opportunity on average once a day, with 18 to 24-year-olds feeling the most regretful about passing up opportunities. In your 30s, Donna says that you can feel that you can say yes more often to the things you want to do, not just what you're obligated to say yes to. In the top 10 list, people most wanted to say yes to going on adventures, learning new skills, new jobs, accepting help, and travel opportunities, among others. Men are more likely to experience feelings of fear towards new opportunities, but women are shown to be able to grapple better with new opportunities. However, women typically experience regret more often. Donna says that saying yes is how we grow and mature, and you don't have to succeed on the first try, and that's important to remember in life.
It's not so much regret, it's probably just disappointment in men, basically, but I'm just saying. Carry on.
So I have to say, for this week, I think that the award for Most Valuable Contributor has to go to Dr. Khan.
Indeed. Absolutely wonderful. And it gives us a few moments for Phil Leonis to have almost the final word, together with Hannah O'Brien, of course. Where would you like to actually suggest we should go, given that you've recently celebrated your birthday, Phil? And as indeed Anna and indeed Hermione and Tosin can actually confirm, there was a special dedication just for you from Victoria Simmons. Phil wasn't listening.
I haven't gotten to that part yet. I've made it through the interstitial interview that
nice.
You did. That's where I've left off. So I still have, but it's still my birthday week. So,
this
you know, we don't rush these things.
That's true.
But as the birthday boy, yes, I have three things that I would like to say. One, getting back to Jessica's question to the good doctor, Jessica, who it's my wish will one day name herself Most Valuable, because after all, without her, there is no Most Valuable. So that's like an Ouroboros. That's the snake eating its tail. Mm-hmm. Anyway, her question about shampoos and whatnot, I was told something that was very easy for me to remember, and I think based on what the doctor said has great truth to it, which is don't put anything on your body that you would not eat. You know, don't put chemicals and things on your skin if you would not eat it, because after all, you are eating it. And this is why, instead of, for example, over-the-counter shaving creams, I put actual cream on and I just let my cat lick it off.
Almost too much information there. Still, Hannah could probably take it to one side with her own ray of sunshine.
In terms of the yes, the saying yes, this is always one of those tricky things that gets a little bit annoying, right? The power of yes, say yes to everything. And so then people, you know, say yes to saying yes all the time. And this is why improv and acting classes can be so healthy for people, because you realize that you have to say yes to saying no. Mm-hmm. Also, you can't say no to no. So follow your own instincts and your own intuition and your own sense of whether something that is proposed is healthy for you. Does it feel safe? Does it feel healthy? Does it feel respectful?
Take the tummy
test.
It
may be scary. It may be scary, but if it feels disrespectful, if it feels unhealthy, then you're not saying no, you're saying yes to your own health, to your own safety. And that's the thing to keep in mind. And finally, I just wanted to share, in Tuscany, everybody was so excited on this tour that I was on when they came by this beautiful Benetton shop. And before any of them had the chance to go in, and I hope Tosin will appreciate this, they got a big lecture from me about Benetton.
There you go.
Nice one. Nice one, Phil.
That's what it's all about. Hannah, you've got 30 seconds. Anything you'd like to say?
Oh my goodness. I don't know how to follow Phil's part just then. I was just nodding along, and yes, I'm.
Someday we're going to have to introduce Ray to Fuzz Aldrin. We need to actually put those two together, I think.
We actually should. I think that Ray is. Ray has been bugging me all through the show since I've joined, and now that she's got her moment in the sunshine, she's gone off to eat her dinner.
Her very own
Which has been down since I got home. So.
Yes, that's true. Phil, have you enjoyed your time on the Midweek Drive today?
No.
Okay. Are you back again in December?
Of course.
There
of
you
course.
Go.
I have nothing. I just said no, didn't no. I? Just because I was saying yes to my own
true.
Need to be,
we know this. We know this.
But of course I'll be back. Where else would I celebrate the holiday season?
Critical. Don't forget, Chill Pack Hollywood Hour is available on all major platforms for podcasts and so on. Jessica, it's been a delight as ever. See you next week. Actually, we'll see you for Quantum Leap and, of course, the exciting line of Resonance Rewind, which hopefully might see Phil Lynas return very near future. Thanks to Hannah O'Brien as well. Obviously, thanks to you, dear listener, in the studio. Thank you, Hermione. Thank you, Tosin. Thank you, Anna. Should it be Anna Teodora, or is it just Anna? I mean, what would you like?
It's fine, just Anna.
What would you like? What would you prefer?
Everybody calls me Anna or Leah. I bet Leah. You never heard of that.
No,
yet.
No. Right. Okay. Yeah. Next week, Leah might be back with us. Okay. Don't forget, we have more Siren Radio goodness coming up after the news with Early Night with Callum. Time for Brandon Flowers. Can we all say be healthy? 1, 2, 3.
Be healthy.
Be healthy.